LunaticMania.com.
There. I think that says X in fairies. Save yourself from hell.
Liberate tutti, ex in fairies.
Grab your hockey mask, sharpen your machete, and prepare to travel through a black hole into a soul-destroying hell dimension of fear. Sci-Fi Malady and Raving Lunatic Media Productions present Horror Mama.
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 42, Ex in Ferris. Horror Month continues, and we have reached the point where we get to talk about one of my favorite movies of all time. I know this movie is roundly hated by some people, but this is one of my top five favorite movies of all time. Do not gouge your eyes out, people, but we are going to talk about Event Horizon today. No Rage Master this week. Do have Corey here. How you doing, Corey?
Hey, I'm good.
So, to start Horror Month off, we talked about Jason in Space. And then Rage Master and I did Call of Cthulhu last week. Next week, we'll be doing Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. I cannot wait for that. That's going to be so much fun.
That'll be a full cast effort. We might even have that Nick guy back for that one.
Who's
that? Try to get him into the studio. He was here once or twice.
Oh, that guy that broke the chair.
He likes the movie Looper.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well.
Actually, I broke the chair.
Oh, okay. Well,
Nick just likes the movie Looper. Nicholas. That's still the clip we have of Nick.
Have you ever seen that movie Looper?
No. No one likes that movie. That movie is a piece of crap.
The movie Looper where John McClane travels backwards in time to meet himself?
Exactly.
Stay away from Nakatomi Plaza, man. No. All right, now we're way off of Event Horizon, though. But
we're still talking about sci-fi, so it's okay.
It's all good. Event Horizon came out in 1997 and was a massive bomb. And this surprises me because I liked this movie from the moment I saw it. The first time I watched this movie, I was 17 years old. I was at my dad's house. I was the only one in the house. And it was like 11 o'clock at night, and I watched it with all the lights off and the doors open. And it was probably in the fall because it was a summer release, and I was watching it on VHS. That's nice. How old I am. Wasn't watching it on DVD. Nice. I was watching on a videotape, people. Had to rewind it or you'd get a fine from the movie rental store. Movie in the way back machine. You used to go to stores and take tapes home to watch them.
And then you had that little extra thing added onto your or next to your VCR, the rewinder. Did you have one of those?
VCR rewind just
That's
to rewind
right.
the tape
That's
so you
right.
so you could watch your next movie
That's
while
right.
the other movie was rewinding.
And it took about half the time to watch the movie as it did to rewind it.
Yes, Ugh. Kids. The before time was scary.
It was
very, very scary. This movie freaked me out. And there are parts of this movie that to this day freak me out. And I think this is just a great example of sci-fi horror. But this movie bombed. It was a $60 million production in 1997, which was not a small budget at that time. And it made $26 million.
See, when you first told me that, so I've recently watched Event Horizon within the last couple of weeks. I had never seen nor heard of this movie. And that surprised me a little bit until we started talking about the movie itself. And then I wasn't so surprised because I think that this movie came out about 10 years too late. You know, it has a very alien feel. It has a lot of the sci-fi from the 70s and 80s with a little bit of 90s mix in there. I really liked this movie a lot. Despite some of the things that people disliked, I kind of overlooked it. Something I really like about this movie as well is the lead actor is one of my favorite actors of all time. I think he's a little underrated. Not Lawrence Fishburne, and I'm going to forget his name now.
Jason Isaacs?
Yep, Jason Isaacs.
The guy who plays DJ.
No.
No, Sam Neill?
No.
Weir?
Weir, yeah.
Sam Neill.
Sam Neill, sorry. One of the first movies I watched when I was a kid was Jurassic Park. And I love Jurassic Park. I even like Jurassic Park 3. I know that's a scary thought. But I really like Dr. Alan Grant. And I really liked seeing him in this movie. And I think he does a fantastic job in this movie playing that kind of creepy weirdo that is also kind of the bad guy in the movie towards the end. And I really, really enjoyed watching him in another role. So maybe that was some of the forgivings that I had. I don't think so, because I know that's another thing too that I want to preface. I love Aliens. Anything to do with Aliens or anything that puts me into that feeling of, oh, this is kind of reminiscent of Aliens, I love, as long as it's not a steaming pile of crap, AVP Requiem. but, yeah, so I really enjoyed this movie, despite it being 20 years old and having some things that were a little bit, you know, dated and crappy, but not for its time.
So. And we need to really clarify that. First off, talking about the cast, I mean, you have Lawrence Fishburne, and right. This is pre-Matrix, but it's Lawrence Fishburne, yeah. And he's an excellent actor in anything he does. You have Sam Neill, who is accomplished, and you have Jason Isaacs, who always plays whatever part he's given very well. You have a great cast for this movie, which is another reason I'm surprised that this thing bombed the way it did. It could be release timing. You released a horror science fiction movie in the middle of summer when people are more looking for action movies.
Right.
This movie would have been better served to be released in October. I don't think it would have done anything. Rotten Tomatoes gives it like a 24%. Siskel and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up out of 4. This movie met very tepid response from the critics at the time. And a lot of it is because it's an undefined script. It's a very cut-and-paste horror science fiction movie, and you don't really ever clearly know who the villain is or what the villain is, and some things are unexplained. We'll get to later. Corey and I both think this is a strength of the movie. Mm-hmm. But one thing that you brought out is that if you watch it today, and one of the things it's hated for today, to get another perspective on this of someone who hates the movie, we did watch the Nostalgia Critics review, and I love the Nostalgia Critics' work. I find him funny. Not so much.
No.
But one of the things that people point out that they don't like about this movie is that the CGI is bad. The CGI is bad for 2017 standards.
Right.
This is one of the first movies to attempt a CGI fog and mist. This was one of the first movies to really work with one of the early attempts at using CGI heavily. And if you take out a couple bad experiments in CGI, and you have to experiment with something before you get it right, It doesn't break the movie.
No.
There is no point where CGI, obvious CGI is obvious, but it doesn't break the movie. It's not Escape from LA bad, where Snake Bliskin is clearly on a blue screen riding a wave on a surfboard, okay?
Right.
It doesn't break the movie. There's nothing that breaks your concentration and you can't follow along. But this movie is visually stunning today.
Oh, yeah.
It, for whatever doesn't hold up in the CGI effects and a couple bad flybys of the Lewis and Clark, where it's clearly a toy model on a string, the overall eerie, evil, foreboding feel of the event horizon comes through. The doors have teeth.
Right.
Well, everything looks dangerous. Everything on that ship looks like it will kill you if you accidentally trip into the wall. The engine core has spikes on it.
Yeah, that was it was a little weird, some of that stuff. But you kind of over, like, especially watching it the first time, I didn't notice that right off the rip. I was like, wow, this is kind of creepy. And I thought about it for a second, but then just went, whatever, go with it. Who cares? The CGI, I actually don't have many complaints about it. I really do like using smaller models. I think it does a little bit better in some realms. But look, we're in a day and age where we have 4 Transformer movies, or is it 5 now? I don't remember. But we have a bunch of those live actions pieces of crap. We have, and again, I'm going to say something I don't want to, but we're going to have a second Pacific Rim movie. And so we're in a day and age where visual effects kind of is the standard for everything. And everybody's like, yeah, that movie's plot was crap, but hey, you saw giant robots fighting each other, didn't you?
And this is why I think it's funny that people criticize Event Horizon visually today. Roger Ebert, who hated the movie, commented that it was a visually amazing movie.
Yeah.
And it was. There was a lot of good makeup work done to create Weir at the end, where he's transformed into the evil demon. There was a lot of work done into the flash scenes where he's yelling, "Do you see?" And they're giving images of the crew in hell. That's really detailed makeup work that they did to create those gory scenes. The scene at the beginning where Weir is shaving, and they do the cut to the blinds closing. You see his razor go, and as he takes a razor stroke to shave his beard, the blinds close.
Right.
And it's a great cut, and then it spirals out of the space station, showing a live action shot to start, pulling back to the space station. The camera's on a gimbal rotating, and the space station is rotating against the Earth, and it keeps pulling back. That shot took a year to make.
They
worked on that shot in post-production for a year. The director put a lot of work, and the director of photography, the art director, they put a lot of work into making some of the shots in this film. And you could say a lot of things about Event Horizon, but visually, it still holds up, with the exception of some bad CGI 20 years later.
Right.
That's hard to say.
And that's the thing, is even the bad CGI, I guess maybe the flamethrower scene, and I guess some of the like floating stuff, like it's really obvious when you see it, but I go into a lot of movies with certain expectations and certain pre assumptions of stuff. But I went into this movie with nothing. All I knew about it was what you and Mark had told me, or what Rage Master and you had told me, and that was, it's a sci-fi horror movie. So I went into it not expecting anything, and I saw the bad CG, but I kind of accepted it because there's so much better involved, and there are good CG scenes too. I felt like the effect in the beginning, all the floating stuff that's in zero G, while that CG isn't great, it's not terrible either, and that was, I guess, the only real complaint that you could say for CG. Other than the flamethrower scene, I didn't find much of it, or the Burning Man as well was kind of bad CG, but I didn't find any of it like so awful that it was unwatchable, and it didn't take you out of the immersive feeling that you have in it.
One of the things we talk about in this show a lot, at least I do and harp on, is using score and using nonverbal clues to tell the story and to set mood and setting. And this movie does that very well. That initial CG scene is meant to give you the feel that the Event Horizon has been abandoned and it's a derelict and it's lifeless. And it does that.
Yeah.
Very, very well. Visually, this movie holds up. Another thing that this movie does very well is, you know, you're watching a sci-fi horror film from the start.
Yes.
There's never a doubt here where this movie doesn't feel creepy and that you don't realize that something's wrong from the beginning.
Right.
Just from the beginning, with Weir's nightmare, you see him screaming on the ship. They're not headed to a good place, and you know it right from the start.
Right.
That feel is set from the beginning. Now, before we get into a plot synopsis, let's talk a little more about the troubled production here. The movie that you will see, if you go watch the theatrical release, and there really hasn't been a director's cut yet because the footage has been lost.
Right.
If you go watch this movie, what you see is version 3.0.
Mm-hmm.
Version 1 had 30 minutes of film that was cut because it was too gory. There was a lot more of torturing of the crew in hell. Those jump cut scenes that you see at the end where Weir is saying, "Do you see? Do you see?" That's the 30 minutes that's cut out.
Mm-hmm.
All of those quick cuts, there was an extended scene where all of that's happening. Torture, there was a rape, there was an assault. It was violent, dark imagery. As dark as this movie is, it was worse. And the studio said, "You've got to cut this out." The original version of this movie was an hour and 36 minutes. What you got at the end was a 96-minute movie. You had a 2-hour and 10-minute movie,
which
at one point,
which we both agreed would, in our opinion, would have actually, and a lot of people disagree with us here, but I think that would have made it worse. I feel like those scenes shouldn't be in there. I feel like leaving it up to the imagination, with the exception of a few scenes that we'll talk about later. I think that a lot of that would have diluted your imagination's ability to go, well, how horrible is this place? Especially that point where Weir is constantly asking, do you see, do you see? And you start to realize, like, Baby Bear went crazy because he saw. and this horrible just
Baby
the,
Bear.
Yeah, I know. Just the imagery alone was enough to set his psyche on the verge of I want to die instead of knowing what I know.
Everybody claws their eyes out.
Right.
Everybody is ripping. That's a motif.
Right.
They can't bear to look at what they're seeing, and they pull their own. How terrible of a place have you gone to if you rip your own eyes out?
Right. Right. And that's I think that the movie is better because it leaves your imagination to wander and wonder, well, how horrible is it? How bad could it be that this is what it causes? It goes back to that old, like, don't play Dungeons and Dragons, you'll go insane, and you'll start wandering in sewers, and you'll murder each other. I think that was a big appeal for a lot of people to play
D&D. I'm going to find out what this game is now.
Yeah, exactly. So it really, does it kind of, like, knowing that that's out there, do I want to see it? Yes. But do I think it would have made the movie better? No. I think that my imagination will be infinitely worse than what anything they can show me on screen. And there's some pretty graphic and brutal stuff that you see on screen. I don't think more of that would make this more scary. I think it would do the opposite.
So I don't think that it would necessarily have made the movie worse to keep that 30 minutes in, but right. I don't think it's necessary. The finished product in the end still accomplishes what the writer and the director were trying to do. Originally, this movie was written with aliens as the bad guy in the Event Horizon attacking the crew. It was rewritten so that it wasn't a blatant aliens ripoff to right. being a generic force, an unknown force, and you know the hell overtones were added to it. But I don't think that the failure to explore the torture in the hell dimension takes anything away from here, which is supposed to be, you know, the crew losing their mind slowly because they're exposed to something that is not of this reality and can't be comprehended. It works still. But I think it would have added something. You would have... You miss some things like DJ gets dissected alive by Weir. What you would have found out is that his biggest fear is being dissected alive.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper, you would have found out his biggest fear is losing a friend, which is why he went so nuts over Baby Bear. You would have had a little more exploration of Morpheus. I almost called him Morpheus. You would have had more of an... I did call him Morpheus.
That's okay.
You had He will always be. You would have had a little more exploration of Captain Miller's lost crewmate in the Burning Man and why that was getting to him. And you would have understood more of the motivation of these characters. It would have been more background into Weir's wife's suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And these things might have made more sense. And it might have given... you would have understood why they were so afraid and unable to differentiate between reality and illusion and what this evil force was doing to them. I also think the fact of getting trapped in that hell dimension might have had more punch had you had a little more of an understanding without giving it all away.
Right.
And I think in 30 minutes, what we're talking about here is a lot to cram into 30 minutes. So I think it still would have worked. And I think it probably would have added a little bit to the movie, but it certainly isn't needed.
No, and it would have made the movie way too long. It is slow.
I also think it would have solved... Sorry, not stubbing
you.
I think the movie, at some point, it starts accelerating.
It does.
It's a weird pace acceleration, because the first 50 minutes in this movie is a slow build.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting to the Event Horizon. You're finding out what's going on the Event Horizon. You're watching people lose their mind. Weir's behavior jumps around. When Peters dies, he's still a human being, and he's still right. upset by it. And very, very shortly afterwards, he is the bad guy. And something is lost here. And this movie takes a jump, and it's something that, if you don't do editing, it's really hard sometimes to seamlessly cut out 5 minutes of mm-hmm. something and make it pace correctly. They cut 30 minutes out, and I'm thinking that 30 minutes was somewhere in that weird part between like the 45-minute mark and the end where this movie starts accelerating and ramping up and goes from 0 to 80 miles an hour instantly.
Right.
And I think what you missed in that was a little bit of the ramp up. So the movie, to me, doesn't have a pacing problem per se, but there's a weird moment in the movie where the pace just accelerates out of nowhere, and I think that might have been smoothed over by leaving some of that 30 minutes in there.
Yeah, it definitely would have had a little more of an explanation and things like that. But I don't think it was necessary. I think a lot of a lot of this movie is left to the imagination, and I think that's where it belongs, and I think that's why I like it so much, is that's where a lot of good sci-fi is just, this is what is interpreted. It's why Star Trek is so well loved and received by the sci-fi community.
Star Trek. Do you know our Lord?
Yeah, I know.
Here's a tract for eternal life.
If you don't know this already, I'm not super big into Star Trek, but I can understand and appreciate why that is such a big thing. I like movies like this where it's, and we talked about this a little bit before the podcast, it ties everything together very well while leaving very much open to the imagination and open to interpretation. Just you and I having the conversation about how it ended, we both had a little bit of a different conclusion than the other.
It's not an Inception ending, but it's an Inception ending. All right, let's go through a little bit of a plot synopsis here and to discuss the movie here in a nutshell. So the movie starts, it takes place in the year 2047. The event horizon has been lost 7 years earlier out by Neptune. Nobody knew exactly what it was doing. It was hidden. Turns out that what the event horizon was really doing was testing a gravity drive. In 2047, it reappears out of nowhere on satellite, and they're going to send Captain Morpheus, Miller, and his crew, along with Sam Neill's character, Dr. Weir, to recover the event horizon and figure out what went wrong. It's at this point that Dr. Weir fills the crew in on the real purpose of this experiment, which was to test the faster-than-light gravity drive, which would allow the ship to get to Proxima Centauri almost instantaneously. What's the gravity drive? What's the old wrinkle-in-time method of folding space?
Mm-hmm.
You take one part of space and bend it somehow miraculously to the other so that points A and B exist at the same time, and the ship travels through the hole, and after it does, space-time collapses back to a flat piece of paper again instead of a folded up piece of paper that you can instantaneously bridge and walk through. Ship goes out to the Lewis and Clark, heads out to find this ship, and as soon as you find the event horizon, something is instantly wrong. Right. You know something's wrong because there's blood on the bridge command panel, and then behind them it looks like five people exploded and went a splat all over the wall.
Even before that, you have the creepy message where it's just screaming and garbled nonsense.
Which is the first thing you hear on our intro to Horror Month.
Yeah, and just a little bit of Latin mixed in there, and you immediately know something is really, really wrong. Even after you have Weir's strange dream sequences and stuff like that. So
while exploring the ship, the team starts to hallucinate very, very quickly. The first thing that happens here is Justin sticks his finger into the gravity drive. For more on this, catch Rage Master Rips a Clip on Wednesday, because Rage Master didn't particularly like this scene, even though he does like the movie as a whole. But he did do a Rips a Clip on that, which I will post, and you should listen to, because it's good.
See, real quick, I'm sorry, but I don't have an issue with this scene, because it's early established that this kid isn't the smartest one of the bunch.
Well, I don't have an issue with this scene either, because it's established that the ship is capable of mind bleepery.
Right.
It gets inside your head, and it makes you do what it wants you to do.
Right. But again, I don't have an issue with this.
Here's the thing. What Dr. Weir says later is, that could only happen if the gateway was open. The gateway can't be open. The ship opened the gateway on its own for Justin.
Right.
So if this ship, which can make you see and see things that it wants you to see,
mm-hmm.
can open the gateway on its own, it clearly wanted Justin to go through the gateway.
Right.
So it opened the gateway. It probably bleeped with Justin's mind and made him do that. I don't have a problem with this scene.
I don't either.
Plus, it's necessary for the plot advancement.
Yeah.
Things sometimes happen because the plot needs them to happen. That doesn't take away any of the entertainment value from Rage Master Rips a Clip on this one. And still listen to it.
Yeah.
But Justin gets pulled in through the gravity drive well,
mm-hmm.
wherever the event horizon went. So now he's existing in this bridge between two dimensions. And Cooper comes to pull him out of there because he's attached to a security harness line, which is really smart, actually. Shows the Space Marines, Space Salvage crew actually using intelligent thought. pulls him out, but Justin is comatose. Justin mm-hmm. is gone. There's no sign. He's catatonic, not comatose right. so much as catatonic.
Yep.
He's going to spend the rest of the trip, well, mostly, in the med bay and eventually in the cryostasis.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, people continue going around the ship hallucinating.
Right.
Captain Miller and Weir and Peters go, or Stark, go investigate the core to figure out how it happened. Weir tells Cooper that he's, you know, delusional, which everyone's delusional, but they don't know it yet.
Right.
And this is where you see Weir start getting more and more and more defensive about his ship. And eventually, Baby Bear comes to, mm-hmm. tries to blow himself out of an airlock.
Yep.
Mama Captain
Bear,
Miller,
open the door. Mama Bear.
What's going on? And it's at that moment, after he opens the door, that the ship releases him.
Right.
The ship no longer needs him. It's just killed him.
Yep.
And Captain Miller saves him.
Which, by the way, let's talk about that for just a second. Because that is one thing that did irk me a little bit. So we're at a point in time where space travel's been going on, blah, blah, blah. And Miller starts giving Peter's instructions on what to do. Curl yourself up into a ball. Make yourself as small as possible. So we're assuming that there is a standard for going into the vacuum of space. But correct me if I'm wrong. The minute you touch the vacuum of space, you're screwed, right? I mean, you're not.
The theory is that if you blew all of your breath out before decompression, there would be no air to escape your body and therefore explosive decompression damage to your lungs. If you didn't breathe, while your capillaries would be bursting from the pressure and you'd be suffering severe frostbite. If you didn't breathe, you wouldn't then flash freeze your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, trust me, this scene is unrealistic.
Okay.
I guess in theory, you might be able to survive until you took that breath.
Right.
And as long as you could hold your breath, you might be okay.
So, and then that's the only real issue. I like this scene. The scene is pretty cool, but it's extremely unrealistic. And the thing that was hard for me, the big pill for me to swallow, was that Baby Bear was able to go through this whole routine that he, we presume, would have been trained to do while under the duress and the what was it, 8 seconds when he finally was released from the ship's hold on his mind, that in that 8 seconds he was able to get out of his shock and do his training and be able to survive that. I just don't find it believable that this idiot was able to do that. But otherwise, the scene was cool. So
it adds some drama. It adds some tension. Yeah. You then get to see your first real death, which is Peters, who believes she's following her son, mm-hmm. and she just falls into the engine core and dies. But at this point, you find that DJ has now interpreted the statement. Instead of saying "Liberate me, save me," it's "Liberate tutte me, ex inferis," save yourself from hell. They reach the conclusion, which the movie leads you to believe is the correct conclusion, that the event horizon in opening up the gravity drive didn't just travel through time and space, it traveled through dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And it either brought something back with it from that other dimension, or the ship itself became sentient. They settle on the fact that the ship is alive. At this point, Captain Morpheus decides that he's going to destroy the ship, and Weir tells him you can't do that, and Corey and I think this is one of the best lines in the movie. He's like, "I will fire attack missiles at it until it is destroyed. Bleep this ship."
Oh, man. It just, you know, the thing I love about that is this is a horror movie that everyone who complains about horror movies not being believable does exactly what you would do in that situation, which is, screw this, we're leaving. We're done with this. We're not investigating further, and we're going to blow it up. This ship is messed up, so we're going to destroy it. Why? Because it makes sense to do so. I don't care about regulation. Screw regulation. And you know, it's always, everybody complains about the horror movie because, oh, there's a scary noise, let's go towards it. This movie does exactly what you should do. We're going to get into our ship, we're going to launch missiles at it until this thing is gone and annihilated. And then they put plot twists in that make sense, that actually progress the story and prolong the drama that ensues after that. And I like that a lot. I really do.
Weir and Captain Miller then have a disagreement over what's going to happen to the Event Horizon, and Captain Miller tells him, Doctor, either get back in the ship or you're walking home. And in one of the coolest scenes of the movie, Weir just takes a step back and disappears in the darkness and says, I am home. And it's great because the darkness swallows the character literally and figuratively.
Yep.
It's at that point that Weir is the villain. He is unredeemable at this point. The ship has got him. All vestiges of his humanity are lost. Weir sabotages the ship. Mm-hmm. It kills Schmitty. It blasts Cooper into space.
Real quick, let's clarify. He sabotages the Lewis and Clark, not the Event Horizon.
Stranding them on the Event Horizon.
Yep.
The next scene is Weir with his eyes gouged out after his wife's suicide happened there too. He had to revisit that, which really pushed him over the edge. The ship really, you know, at that point completed screwing with his head.
Mm-hmm.
Then you cut to the next important scene is him on the bridge in the chair of the captain's chair of the Event Horizon, completely now under the control of whatever is controlling the Event Horizon or the ship, if you buy that it's a sentient being after crossing through the dimensions. For some reason, he shoots Cooper, who lands on the outside of the ship.
Oh.
And now we have another breach into space. Big heroic drama moment. Weir flies off into space, and I fully believe is dead, and the Weir you see later is just in Captain Miller's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But Cooper then makes his way to the airlock, and the three of them decide that they're going to destroy the ship because DJ's dead. In this meantime... Jason Isaacs' character has been dissected and vivisected alive and hung yep. upside down by Dr. Weir,
mm-hmm.
controlled by the Event Horizon. So now these three, Cooper, Stark, and Miller, are going to blow up the connecting umbilical cord and then send out an emergency message in the lifeboat and wait to be rescued in cryostasis. Plan's going to go all well and good, except that the Event Horizon is having none of it and first makes Captain Miller, while he's setting the bombs, hallucinate that he sees a man that he left to burn to death in liquid zero-G fire.
Right.
And then a fiery explosion happens. This hallucination now becomes real because the Event Horizon now has the ability to manipulate reality, actually, and not just make you think you're seeing things.
Or it could have just been Miller's... The hallucination was so
that it made
profound
him,
that it made him believe that it was real.
Yeah, and he dives into the core.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Burning Man becomes Weir. And now this is open to debate, you know, because he says, Weir, how are you here? The Event Horizon brought me back. I think this is all in Miller's head. I think this is the Event Horizon trying to buy a few minutes of time for the gravity drive to open so that it can take Miller, Cooper, Justin, who's in cryostasis, and Stark through the hell dimension with it and get back to its home and right. do to them what it did to the other crew and feed off of them. So I think this is just the Event Horizon using what Miller is afraid of, a returned Weir, to buy time. Or if you want to, the Event Horizon with its magic powers conjured Weir back up out of vacuum and put him back together.
Either way, Weir is super creepy and has his eyes back.
Yes, and it doesn't matter which way you believe it works, right. whether it's Weir or a manifestation of Weir in Captain Miller's head. And his eyes are back. The eyes that he clawed out of his head are back.
Right.
This was an alternate ending. In the first ending of this movie, in the second ending of this movie, it was the Burning Man the whole time, and Weir never
first
returns.
One. First one. First one was...
No, the first one was Weir. Then they made the Burning
you're right,
Man.
You're right.
And then
in
the third ending, they put it back to Weir.
Yep.
The one that you see is Weir. The Burning Man morphs into Weir. Captain Miller and Weir fight. Miller finds the, after a do you see in a flash panning to all these images of the crew being tortured in hell, he blows up the ship and Stark and Cooper and Justin wait for rescue. And then you get the M. Night Shyamalan, not an Inception ending, where Stark hallucinates that she sees Weir. Right as she's coming out of the cryo tank.
So I noticed something about this, and I know you said that that was supposed to be, the ending was supposed to be that Stark just broke mentally and went insane.
That's what the director
right.
said in the commentary.
Well, I noticed something about that, though. If that were the case, then the Weir she would have saw was the Weir with just his eyes clawed out, right?
Yes.
And what Weir does she see?
The Weir that had the final battle with Captain Miller.
That fought with Miller. But she never saw that Weir.
I like to believe that whether you were on... Look, the Event Horizon went to hell and came back sentient, right?
Yep.
Why would only the drive section and the umbilical be possessed
exactly.
and sentient? Why would the lifeboat not have the same right. sentient presence?
Which is basically the head of the ship.
Yes.
It's the Iron Giant head, basically.
So yes. I like to believe that that is still the Event Horizon sentience from the Hell Dimension, conjuring up that image of Weir that it last used to scare off Miller.
Yep.
And that's how it's still there. It's still in her head, and they don't end up getting home. The whole thing starts over again with the new ship, and they don't ever tell you what happens. I don't believe they're safe. That's the ending I like to go with.
And that's I'm in the same boat with you.
And for the record, director is just director. He's not the writer. He brought the writer's vision to screen, and we'd have to ask the writer what that ending means, not the director. That's the director's opinion of how he read the script.
And again, the Weir that she sees is the Weir that only Miller sees in the end, the sliced up Hellraiser looking Weir with his eyes back, and that's the last thing Stark sees. And then we fade to Cooper trying to calm her down, saying, we're safe, we're rescued. And then the doors close and the end.
So from a plot perspective, this is a very basic movie.
Mm-hmm.
It flows A, B, C, D, and there's a resolution. It's a survival movie. It is, as the director said, it is a haunted house in space, mm-hmm. complete with thunder and lightning, thanks to being in Neptune orbit and Neptune apparently being stormy with lightning and the same dynamics we would have here.
Right.
I'm not an astrophysicist, so I don't know if that's real or not. I don't care. It's a cool dynamic and adds ambiance.
Right.
And it sets mood. But for a haunted house in space, the plot works. Because in any haunted house movie, you don't necessarily have to understand why the evil ghost is the evil ghost, what it is, what its weakness is, how to kill it. You're just trying to get away. And sometimes, as Rage Master and I talked about in the Call of Cthulhu last week, it's better that the big bad is unkillable, unknowable, and that you know from the start that all you're trying to do is get away and survive or contain it. And that's eventually what Captain Miller comes to as a determination in this movie. So it's a simple plot, mm-hmm. but it doesn't need to be a complicated plot. And it works because what this movie does very, very well is it creates tension. It creates drama. There's a lot of jump cuts, startle cuts that as a viewer for the first time made me jump a little bit. I said the first time I watched this movie, the lights were out in the house mm-hmm. and I was by myself. It's a creepy movie. It'll startle you a little bit at times. And there's imagery that sticks with you. This is brutal, dark, violent imagery in this movie. And it's also a tale about people losing their minds. But I think what makes this movie work so well for me is that the villain is hell. Right. It's the embodiment of hell. It's almost as if the Weir character becomes the devil, and he's going to take you back with him to hell where he will torture you forever. And it's almost implied that though your body may die, your soul will be trapped in that dimension with him.
Right.
You know, that's where the save yourself from hell comes in. You'll be tortured. But there's this implication that your soul will be stuck in that hell dimension. Don't come after us, because you're just going to lose your own mind here. You're just going to lose your own soul forever. There's no rescue. You can't be. And this movie works that way. That scene in where reality starts changing. I love movies where you can't depend on the rules of reality anymore. That scene where Weir is crawling through the guts of the ship to try to fix the gravity drive, and the lights start going out, and then the hallway expands behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And then in front of him, and the dimensions of time and space are shifting. I love that. Because some of the things that have always scared me the most in my head is that things will change around me, and I won't be able to, you know, that type of bending reality is what's always played on my fears the most. So while it's a simple plot movie, it's okay. Because where this movie works is in scaring you and giving you images that if you really chew on them, terrify you because you don't know them. There's no definition to them. You talked about that a little bit earlier where you said not knowing what was in the hell dimension allows your imagination to run a little bit and amplify your fears.
Yeah, your imagination is always the scariest part of all of it. It's why, you know, for 1,000 years, the Catholic Church was able to scare people into not wanting to go to hell and not being sinners. You know, your imagination is always going to be infinitely more scary than anything that you see or read. Leaving it vague and open like that is perfect for a sci-fi horror movie. It doesn't need to be explained. And I think a lot of movies today just explain things to death. Like, even games like Until Dawn is a perfect example of that, where you have this element where it's scary until you get to the point where it starts explaining it, and then you're just like, well, this is just stupid. It's not scary, it's just dumb, and it doesn't make sense. And I think Event Horizon does it well, where it's vague enough to where it stays scary and it makes sense. It has a frame of reference of hell that everybody can kind of understand, but it makes it infinitely more scary by giving you those moments of shock scenes and giving you that idea of just seeing it, just knowing what it is will make you go insane. And that's scary.
And not being able to trust reality around you.
Right, right.
At this point, none of them know what they can and can't trust.
Right.
Which is what makes Miller's decision to just, we're leaving.
Yep.
I will fire tactical.
Make all the more sense.
Yep.
And that's great. It really is. It's not, there's none of the stereotypical moments that I feel are stupid in horror movies or sci-fi movies for that matter. It has that very, very nostalgic feel of Aliens and movies of akin to that. And even, you know, something that people were complaining about, like, oh, it's a complete ripoff of Aliens, even with the space jockeys and all that. Well, it makes a lot of sense because these people are of a military branch. That's what they are. So they do have very compartmentalized jobs, and many of them aren't scientists.
DJ's a trauma surgeon.
Right, right. We were talking about you said earlier that we watched Nostalgia Critic earlier, and just to get a frame of reference, and that was one of his complaints. And my counterpoint to that is, you drive a car every day. You don't know how a combustion engine works, or most people who drive that car don't know how a combustion engine works. So the fact that these people are a little bit unknowledgeable of space travel or even that the Event Horizon, it makes a lot of sense because they are just there to do a specific job, which is salvage a ship.
Miller's a captain of a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the captain of every naval vessel doesn't fully understand how the engines work, right, how the missile guidance systems work.
Let alone...
But they're trained in command.
Right, and let alone... So we'll just use that. Let's say any naval commander of a battleship, all right? He's not going to understand how an experimental ship that was supposed to be lost 7 years ago is going to be able to do something that was classified information that he never received in the first place.
Nor can he necessarily make a torpedo.
Right, exactly. So I feel like a lot of that makes sense. And the way that the crew acts within each other is very, very much like how a military unit would act. They wouldn't be extremely formal, even with the captain in the room, because the captain is one of them in a lot of senses. And that's how it feels like. You know, Miller's whole goal is to keep his crew alive all the way till the very end when he sacrifices himself and says, take me instead of them, leave them alone. And Weir says, the ship has all of you. She won't let any of you go. You know, it's very obvious that Miller is very close with his crew, is very lax and lenient on procedure with his crew to a certain degree. So I felt like the way that these people acted made a lot of sense. The informalness. And
I did too. And yeah. Honestly, you got to get out of the prejudice that you have that everyone who goes up into a spaceship is going to be super smart and a scientist.
Right.
That's the way it is today.
You know what? I'm going to send
super smart mathematical people into space because we need to. They need to be able to do complex calculations.
Right.
They need to be rocket scientists in a lot of ways because they're strapped to rockets.
I'm going
to
reference a different movie. It's called The Watch. It's a sci-fi comedy movie. Did you see that movie or no?
Did not.
Okay. In that movie, aliens are taking over the world, blah, 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 blah. Essentially, what happens is one of the people that have been trying to combat the aliens is actually an alien, but he's a good alien. So they have to disarm a bomb. I think it was a neutrino bomb or something like that. And the humans look at the alien and they go, disarm it. And he goes, well, I was a plumber. I don't know how to do it, but you're an alien. And his response is perfect. He looks at them and goes, yeah, I'm one of these aliens, but I can't disarm the bomb. Can you even take your cell phone apart? And they all look at him and go, yeah. But yeah, obviously, no, of course not. And so, you know, ever since seeing that, the reason I bring that up is ever since seeing that, I kind of have this frame of reference now where I go, okay, it stands to logic that maybe these alien races or these scary whatevers, or even in this case, these space marines, yeah, they wouldn't know all this stuff. Why would they?
Nope. And that's one of the criticisms that we've seen. And there's three main criticisms. One is that the CGI doesn't hold up and that some of the things visually don't hold up anymore. But the CGI doesn't hold up, but the rest of the movie visually does. And it's a 20-year-old movie, and at the time this movie came out, there was nothing visually wrong with it at all.
Right, and that's the thing, too, is like, give me another movie that does stand the test of time visually forever, aside from maybe Star Wars, but you can complaints in those movies, you know?
And I'm going to tell you that visually, it holds up today. Bad CGI included, because the visuals... One of the strength of this movie is making you feel like you're in a haunted house in space.
It's immersive. Yeah,
and
it's immersive.
Does it. It's a very immersive movie. That's a great description of it. It can't get any better than that, and we're going to leave it there. The next criticism is that there's no plot and there's no resolution to the plot, and you never clearly define the bad guy. You're not supposed to.
No.
And no less than Roger Ebert said that, and far be it from me to criticize someone who's made a career of being a movie critic and knows more about being a critic than I ever will, but... On this one, Mr. Ebert, I think you're wrong, because this movie isn't supposed to have a clearly defined bad guy. It is the embodiment of the concept of hell and hell trying to drag you unwillingly into it.
Right.
That's the bad guy. And the plot doesn't have to be advanced to do that. All the plot has to do is get you to Neptune space, get you to the dimensional gateway, to the hell gate, and then have you try to survive the hell gate drawing you into it. So no... It's not a valid criticism. You can criticize this movie for not having a more clearly defined and strong plot. Doesn't matter. In the terms of the movie, go to hell.
Yeah.
But
there you go.
Another criticism of this movie is that it's not original. Given. It's not original.
No, it's
There's
not.
Nothing original about this movie. Characters hallucinating their worst fears, been done to death over and over and over again. Hellgates, done to death over and over and over again. Space truckers, done to death over and over and over again. Used future, done to death over and over and over again. Survival flick in an enclosed space, done over and over and over again.
Right.
But what it did was it took all of those non-original elements, put them together, and did them very well.
Yeah. And you know, I think, again, we go back to, I think the real failing of this movie is it was released either too late. It was released too late. And that's all it is. Or I guess you could say too soon for, like, maybe visual effects being better, and that may have made the movie better or worse, depending on who you ask. But I just feel like the movie...
Part of the failing was it was released at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You released a movie that should have come out in the fall around Halloween.
Right.
When people are looking for horror movies. In the summer, when people aren't looking for horror movies and they're looking for action movies, okay?
But even then, I think maybe I don't remember 1997. I was 6 at the time, so perhaps the space travel stuff wasn't as popular then. Whatever the case may be, but
it wasn't a golden age of science fiction.
Yeah. So again, and that's you know, we're at a point where science fiction and superheroes and the fantasy and all of that's super, super popular right now. But
this is still more of a horror movie than it is a science fiction
movie. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a science fiction movie only because it's set in space.
Right.
If you set this movie anywhere other than space, it's a horror movie.
Yeah,
and it
absolutely
has no science fiction to it at all. And I'll call it science fiction because anything set in space becomes science fiction. It's in the future and it's in space, therefore science fiction. But this is a horror movie.
Yeah.
It absolutely is first and foremost meant to be a dark, mind-bending, reality-bending horror movie.
Right.
That gets tossed into science fiction because
it's in space. It's Dante's Inferno in space.
It's not a great analogy. And so I think those are the main criticisms of this. There's no character development. Again, doesn't need to be.
No.
Yeah. Would it make the movie stronger if there was more character development? Yes, and that a lot of that was lost in the 30 minutes, which, again, you already had problems with the length of this movie.
Yeah.
It was a challenge to the movie, and it's why this movie is probably, if you really look at it, something like a 7 out of 10. Good movie that could be done better.
You know, I think, too, another thing is maybe they could have focused more on a select few characters as opposed to trying this broad stroke with all of the characters. You know, you could have had, but then it would have just kind of gone into a cliche, and I don't think it would have been as good again, even there. you know, maybe you could have gone a little more into Miller and his backstory with this man, the Inferno Man. Maybe you could have spent a little less time, you know, with Peters and her son. And but I don't think that would have been as good. I think that this, the way that they did it, made it good and made it identifiable enough on a broad stroke with all of the characters, albeit, you know, Cooper's silly and Baby Bear is a throwaway character. But, you know, I think they did a very good job with giving you a broad stroke of these people. And I don't know, I didn't identify specifically with any one character, but I enjoyed all of them. So
the only two characters that you're really supposed to get fully vested in, and that's Miller and Weir.
Yeah. See, I didn't even get invested in Miller. I just liked Weir. In the regards of like,
Weir is the star. Yeah. Weir is the lead. Yeah. And you're dead right about that. Obviously the iconic scene of this movie is the Liberate tutte me, ex inferius mm-hmm. conversation between DJ and Captain Morpheus, and then the video clip of the captain standing right there with his own eyes in his hands. Those two combined to be
scene.
To me, those are the most two disturbing scenes of this movie. And the first time I watched it, when Jason Isaacs delivered that "save yourself from hell,"
yeah,
it was just chilling, because that's when the movie turns.
Oh,
you realize this isn't a rescue mission. It's a survival. It's not a rescue movie. It's a survival movie.
Right.
And it was, that was a great moment. And then when you see that visual and you flash back and you realize it's that smiling captain who spoke in Latin at the beginning, holding his own eyes in front of you,
while his crew literally eats each other alive.
Terrifying. Ugh. Horrifying. Is there another scene that stands out in your mind from the movie that sticks with you? I'll tell you the one for me. And for me, it was when Weir is, I think I alluded to this, Weir is in the hallway and he's trying to fix the ship and then the lights go out. Because I always had kind of a fear that the lights go out and when they'd come back on, the room would be different.
Yeah.
Or that I'd notice things changing. And that hallway goes behind him and it lengthens and then it contracts. And the lights go out again and he's running blindly from something and he can't get his flashlight to work. And then that fear you always have if you're someone as a kid who was afraid of the dark or you're trying to get to somewhere you feel safe. When the lights go out and you turn that light on that time, there standing is his personal boogeyman, his dead wife, who was driven to suicide because he wasn't there for her.
Right.
With her eyes gouged out.
Yep.
And just says, forever. Basically saying, how long will I carry this? That's his personal pain. That's his personal nightmare. That's his personal hell. And he's been asking throughout the movie in the subtext, how long will I carry this with me? Forever.
Yep.
It's brutal. And just that, to me, that scene, I had to pause the movie at that point and turn lights on when I watched it the first time. I'm not lying, okay? That scene, and it stuck with me. As much as the other two scenes have, because to me, they're the iconic ones, that's the chilling scene to me. Is there one for you that sticks out?
Yeah, the one for me that sticks out the most horrible scene for me is Peter's first hallucination when she pulls back the curtain and she sees her child stuck in the incubator and then sees the lesions all over his legs. And you know, that I have four children myself, and that is quite possibly the most awful thing you as a parent could imagine. You know, she's already prefaced that, oh man, because of this trip I couldn't see my son and blah blah blah, and it'll be 9 months now.
And you catch in the trip that he's handicapped.
Right, right.
He has a physical handicap. Already, he's in a wheelchair, I think.
I think he's just sickly. I'm not sure.
I thought he was in a wheelchair.
You may be right. I don't remember. Peters isn't that memorable of a character other than the creepy kid that runs through the ship. But yeah, that scene alone, I just went, oh man, this is awful. And that scene made me go, what the F is going on in this movie? And it just, you know, I think that stuck out the most with me. Also, when Weir just shows back up as Hellraiser, that was pretty awful too.
And it's definitely Pinhead.
I was just like, the inspiration, what is going on here? Dr. Grant, you have changed so much.
Would the scene with Peter's kid have freaked you out more if there were maggots all up and down the leg? Because that was the original cut.
The kid was
covered in maggots.
It's pretty bad to begin with. Again, it really is because I'm a parent.
I think it would have stuck with you even more.
Yeah, probably. I hate stuff like, and it's funny too, because in my tabletops, everybody immediately is like, kill Corey's kids. No, don't.
If not there's my a kids. Kid.
Yeah.
If there's a sorry, kid me, in Corey's yeah, game, this is the rule. So Corey, but all right. So a party, you're walking along and you're approached by a 5-year old girl. I cut her head off.
Yep. Because almost all in all of my games.
Are you sure? Already done. I rolled nat 20. Okay. Her head's cut off. What do? I cast fireball on the body. What, why? It's a 5-year old. Corey, it's a kid in your game. It's going to kill us.
Yeah, many, many times I have had children that have been not been what they seemed. But, yeah, I, you know, stuff like that just scares the crap out of me. And we talked about this before. Like, there are things that I watched when I was 18 before I had kids that I go back and rewatch and go, man, how did I get through this the first time? And I realized that it's because I didn't have those life experiences. Like, I just rewatched Sons of Anarchy, and there are points in that show. Like, his son gets kidnapped, and, like, when I first watched it, I was like, nah, whatever, his kid got kidnapped, he'll find him. But then I rewatched that, and just that feeling of, like, your heart dropping, because you know that's, you know, if that happened to me, that's my child. So that was really a standout scene for me.
It's not science fiction. So the movie Ransom with Mel Gibson, where he's talking to the hostage and he goes, the guy who took his kid hostage, and he goes, "Give me back my son!" Yeah. Would have a lot more meaning to you. Now,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's just, you know, that I don't know anything with parents and having to deal with stuff like that. It's another reason that I freaking hate Insidious. I cannot. Oh man, that movie is so terrifyingly horrible in all the ways that horror movies should be. So yeah, that's what sticks out the most with me.
Anything else to add about this movie before we rate it and wrap it up?
No, I think I'm good. I think we've touched on everything that we wanted to talk about with it.
Event Horizon. So we did Space Machetes for Jason X. So we will do Gouged Out Eyeballs, gouged 1 through eyeballs. 5. Rate this movie. How many gouged out eyeballs? I'll start.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 gouged out eyeballs. Now, I said this is one of my top 5 favorite movies, and that's why I give it a 4.5 out of 5. If I'm being realistic, it's probably closer to like 3.75 gouged out eyeballs. But for me, 4.5 out of 5, it's terrifying. It plays to my specific fears. I was raised in a Baptist household. And if you've gone to a Baptist church, and I know some of our listeners do go to a Baptist church, there are a lot of sermons about the terrors of hell.
Right.
So the concept of hell is deep in my psyche to begin with. And as I said, I always had fears of reality changing on me, of unknowable, faceless evils that I can't confront, that I can't run from, and that I can't get away from. I was the kid who, up until I was 10 years old, used to run down to the basement to turn the light on as fast as I could and try to race the light up the stairs before it went out.
Right.
Okay? Because that was me. It plays to my personal fears. And it just, it always rings home. It always rings true. And to me, this movie is that amazing combination of suspense, terror, dark imagery, horror, and fear. It hits something primal in me. And I still, to this day, if I turn the lights out, be the only person in the house, open the doors, watch this movie at midnight, tell me how you feel. As an adult, you might be just a little skeeved out.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched this movie at night in the dark, knowing full well that it was a horror movie, and I very much enjoyed it. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 5, which for me is very unusual, but I like it. I like the idea that... you know, it's very open to interpretation. It ties up a lot of loose ends. It does what a horror movie is supposed to do. There are cheap jump scares, but that's not the center of the movie. That's not what forces the movie forward, which is what a lot of scary movies today will do. I found it to be very, very well done. And I like most of the actors in it. So, yeah, I give it 4 out of 5.
All right. Next week, Stranger Things. If you like this podcast, please give us a 5-star review in the iTunes store or whatever podcatcher you're listening to this on. You can email us your feedback at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can leave us a comment under this episode posting on our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. Follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Malady. As always, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with Stranger Things. Oh, and November 4th, we're at Comic-Con in Akron. That's going to be on the Akron University campus. I'll get more information up on the website. If you're there, stop by and say hi. Corey, are you going to be there with us? Do you know yet?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Well, possibly. I don't know. Also, a small thing for me. I may be starting up a Twitch stream here soon. Going to be doing a lot of XCOM. Mostly just going to be commenting on, you know, playing the game and how strategy in the game works. I'm also going to be working a little bit on some of the short stories that I've been working on just by playing the game. So if anybody's interested in that, I will have more information on that maybe next week.
We'll get it posted on the website and we'll talk about it on the podcast. And November, can't believe horror movie month is almost over. Horror sci-fi month is almost over.
So sad.
One more to do. But November, we're going to be examining the works of sci-fi giant Philip K. Dick. If you don't know his work, you know his work. Whether it's Minority Report, whether it's Blade Runner, he is one of the giants of science fiction. He writes short stories, the median length stories, and he's one of the best. And we've decided that it's past time to start reviewing his work, even as Corey chuckles like a 5-year-old, because the man's last name is Dick.
I'm so immature.
The only thing that could make that worse is if his name was Peter K. Dick, right?
I try not to make it so obvious, but I'm such a 4-year-old kid. His last name is Dick.
November, Dick Month.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. All right, that's it. We're out. We'll see you next week.